#1 sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg down. Smack on jack.
Nighttime is the right time.
You know the night.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now.
Oh, got to be.
This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
All right, so week 7 in the National Football League is now done after the Arizona Cardinals beat the Baltimore Ravens on Monday Night Football. Another close loss for the Ravens. How many is that this year? I think it's every game they've been in has been by one possession. Oh, poor Ravens. That was a terrible throw. If you saw the game tonight, the Ravens had the ball down near the goal line, looking to punch it in for a touchdown. They were going to need a two-point conversion to tie the game as they were down 26-18. But Joe Flacco got pressure as the Cardinals sent blitz and just lobbed one into the end zone that had interception written all over it. And sure enough, it was picked off. Oh, terrible. And so the Ravens finish out 1-6 now, which is, it's so disappointing. One of a few people that are disappointing in the NFL. We'll go over that coming up. We also got into Jerry Jones tonight and whether or not he was right to defend Greg Hardy. It's his team. It's his player. But I think he looked foolish. I think when you have that much money, I think you don't have to answer to anybody. I don't think you have to address anything. If you want to, fine. You can, that's part about being a billionaire. You get to do what you want. But you shouldn't have to. And to go out there and make a statement that Greg Hardy is a leader, I think was really ridiculous. And it made him look bad. And Jerry Jones has looked bad many, many times in many, many situations. But I just think in this situation, stop defending him and just admit why he's on your team, which is to get to the quarterback. That's all you have to do. You don't have to say anything else about his character. Let that speak for itself. Let that be something that people make their own decision on. But blatantly coming out to try to change this, what are you, his PR firm? He's your employee. He plays football for you. You don't have to justify him being on your team. If he sacks the quarterback, he sacks the quarterback. If he makes a mess of things by yelling and screaming and has anger issues, then you should deal with that as you would any other player. I still can't believe the Cowboys aren't disciplining this guy. Even in a small way, I still can't believe that they won't discipline him. It's mind-boggling. Why would you let a player ever push a coach? Ever? And if you're Jason Garrett, why would you let a player push any one of your coaches? I really wish I could walk around in my job and physically abuse people and just chalk it up to competitiveness and fire. I mean, really? Is that the Neanderthal culture we're in now? Well, yeah, you don't get it, man. He's on fire, man. He's so competitive, man. He's unbelievable. He's just such a leader. He's got that fire to win. Because I see Tom Brady punching every single person he sees. I see Aaron Rodgers just throwing people, like literally grabbing security guards and throwing them to the ground on the concrete because he's got tremendous amount of fire. Cut it out with this. Cut it out with this nonsense. If you're Jason Garrett, you fine him. You say to him, we don't push coaches, we don't shove them for any reason. You better get this in check. It's not what we do here. And that's the other thing, Jerry Jones. Why don't you have a little pride in who you are and what you represent? This is frustrating. And you Cowboy fans out there, you've got to hold this team to that kind of standard. I mean, don't just be a team that lets a Greg Hardy reduce your owner to a blabbering idiot defending his ridiculous and stupid action. It It's okay. Listen, it's okay to admit that a player on your team did something dumb. It's okay to admit that your player and a player on your team is still valuable and is still important and still is an integral part of what you're trying to do without blatantly lying about him to anybody that would listen. Who in the world believes that Greg Hardy represents the leadership qualities the Cowboys are looking for? Who? Who? So don't say it, because it's not true. And just because you say it doesn't mean it's true. I mean, again, I was complaining earlier tonight about how, as a South Carolina fan, it always bothered me that when South Carolina had bad losses, not the 23-20 last second field goal losses, not those. I mean, the 57-10 losses that they used to get routinely in the early part of Spurrier's years, that he would never say this culture needs to change. He never said this program needs to learn from this, so we'll never let this happen again. No, we do not allow this here. He never was that coach. He was always, well, what are you going to do? Why does Jerry Jones have to be the guy that says every time Greg Hardy opens his mouth, whether it's guns a-blazing, disparaging his wife, Tom Brady's wife, or this latest sideline anger explosion, how come he just doesn't say, hey, we're Cowboys. We're America's team, and we don't act like this, and we don't say things like this. You want to be on the Jaguars? You want to be on the San Francisco 49ers or the Pittsburgh Steelers or the New York Giants and do that kind of thing? You go ahead. But here in Dallas, we don't do that. That's not what we do. Why doesn't he say that? Heck, even if you could point out a whole bunch of discrepancies, or you can point out a whole bunch of wrongdoings by Cowboys of the past, it still doesn't mean you can't say it. Just say it. Again, you're a billionaire. But blabbering in this defense of Greg Hardy reduces you to just pathetic. It pains me to see that. I'm a Jerry Jones fan. I like him. I think he's good for the league. I like his openness. He's better than a lot of owners that keep their mouths shut. You know what? He may be crazy, but at least he's a public kind of crazy. But this reduces him to just a blabbering, pathetic person. And you know what? I think he should act better, because he's made a ton of money and he's turned that franchise into the most popular franchise on the planet in terms of monetary wealth. It is the most valuable thing in the world in terms of sports teams. And he's letting this woman beater, and he's letting this really subhuman run it for him? Come on! Don't degrade yourself to his level. Be the better person. Don't defend it. Just say he's here to rush the passer. He's here to get us sacks, because we need a defense that does that, and he's the best player to do that. But everything else is subject to the image of this franchise. And if he goes against that, if he in any way diverts from what we are trying to do here, diverts from the image that we're trying to convey here, then he will be disciplined, he'll be fined, he'll be suspended, or whatever I have to do to get that message clear. He is here playing football at the grace of the Dallas Cowboys and nothing more.
But do you see Jerry Jones ever doing that as long as they're in the division race? I can't see him doing that. He, no matter what happens, shy of him...
What, suspending him?
Yeah, doing anything to Greg Hardy. As long as...
Wait a minute, whoa. How does fining him $10,000 do anything to disrupt their run towards the playoffs?
Jerry never does anything to players. He never... Penalizing for anything.
No. I think you're missing my overall point. You can't change the image of Greg Hardy. That's not what you're trying to do here. You don't change Greg Hardy. You change the perception of your team. Greg Hardy is going to do whatever he wants to do. That's fine. But you don't publicly come out and support him. You publicly come out and say you're going to discipline him. It is not for Greg Hardy. That is irrelevant. You do it for the image of the franchise. Because the moment you start defending Greg Hardy, you become on the same level as Greg Hardy. as a franchise. And as the owner of this team, he needs to elevate the image of the franchise higher than an individual player that acts ridiculous. That doesn't go on anywhere. That shouldn't go on anywhere else. The Patriots don't let that happen. Look what the Patriots did with Aaron Hernandez. They didn't even wait for a trial. The second he was even accused of this, they disowned him immediately. Immediately. They didn't even wait to find out if he was guilty or innocent. They disowned him immediately. Because the image of the franchise is more important than any individual on the team. You don't have to suspend Greg Hardy. You don't have to. You just have to say we're disciplining him because what he did to one of our coaches is not what we do here. And if you are an owner, you have to protect the franchise. If you let a rogue player do whatever the hell he wants, whenever he wants, and you are powerless to do anything because you're at the whim of the player, you have lost. You have lost. You sell the franchise because you can't be taken seriously, and you will run a rogue franchise that will never win.
But I think Jerry's done this already because, I mean, look at all the stuff Dez Bryant has done since he's become a Cowboy. I mean, everything from off the field to throwing fits on the field to yelling at coaches and teammates and Tony Romo, and nothing's ever, all Jerry Jones has come out and said is he loves Dez Bryant's passion. He thinks, you know, he thinks he's going to be a great player, which he is a great player. But there's never been any sort of discipline for all the crap that Dez Bryant has pulled over the last 4 years.
And this is my appeal to Jerry Jones.
Yeah, I think this is just Jerry Jones.
I think you're missing a larger point here. It is irrelevant that he does it. I'm saying he should do it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's where I'm coming from. Your point is, Jerry Jones isn't doing it, so don't worry about it. My point is, no, Jerry Jones, this is why you do this. This is why you change what you're doing. What you're doing doesn't work, and not only what you're doing doesn't work, it is very important that you change. Because you're not getting, you are in a position where these guys are doing whatever they want. You have a player shoving a coach. You're attributing it to competitiveness. Does that mean anybody on your team in a moment of passion can physically strike a coach? Is that the precedent here? Because if it is, tell everybody it is. I don't think Jerry Jones would walk that line. If I was talking to Jerry Jones and I said, Jerry Jones, Jerry, is it okay if a player pushes a coach? And he says, no. And I say, well, what if it's just in that moment of competitive fire that you so love? Well, then that's different. So then when is it different? When is it punishable by discipline? And when is it just whatever it is? Right? You can't have a program. You can't have a franchise that is subject to the whim of players like Greg Hardy who just get to say and do whatever they want and an owner that just constantly defends it.
Yeah, because even in practice, is he worried about? Say that I had passion. I was, you know, passionate about what's going on. So it just happened.
And again, I'm not saying kick him off the team. And I'm not saying suspend him for 10 games. I'm just saying we find him 10 grand and we're giving it to charity. Make it something like that. It's not to change the behavior. It is to change the image. It is to say we don't do this. And this is what happens when you do it. That's why I was surprised Jason Garrett didn't do any discipline. Is Garrett saying anybody that's got any passion or fire, can anybody just push a coach? All right. 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907. Is that the case? That's going on in Dallas. We'll talk about that, plus the World Series. Oh, we got a lot of stuff to get to as the NBA season gets started this week as well on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quick and Loud Studios.
And back to Tony D.
All right, coming up at the bottom of the hour, I'll tell you what names are surfacing for the Miami coaching job already. God, I wish South Carolina would figure out where they want to go. They got Sean Elliott, and they're trying to figure out, well, maybe Sean Elliott will be fine. It's like Dan Campbell in Miami. Yeah, happy people are with the Dolphins right now. Like, oh, they look so much better. Dan Campbell has done such a good job. Did you know he changed the intensity of practices, and it's really shown in the quality of play that the Dolphins have done? You know what else helps the 2-0 record for the Miami Dolphins? The fact that they played the Titans and the Texans.
Can you imagine?
That really helps.
Can you imagine if they beat the Patriots?
Oh, hello. Night? Hello. Can you imagine if they beat the Patriots like they beat the Texans? Dan Campbell could run for president.
Dan Campbell, coach of the year after 3
Coach
weeks.
Of the year. If he's got a 41-0 lead on the Patriots like he did Houston. Oh, my God. Would that be great? Oh, God. See that Thursday night crowd, Phil Sims going, well, Jim, I kind of thought this would happen. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Stop.
Of course you did, Phil.
Of course you did, Phil. Phil. I thought this could happen, Jim. I said at the beginning, I thought that they could put up 41 on them in the first half. Please. Boy, the Texans, that must have been a bad flight home, huh?
Oh, my God.
That's the one Ryan Mallett wants to miss.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
God, is he getting cut or what?
Maybe he just bought a round-trip ticket and just actually flew home.
Oh, yeah, maybe so.
It saved him a little money.
I ain't getting on that flight. J.J. Watt must have been just livid.
Oh, my gosh.
Livid. Just like, even if you didn't know anything about J.J. Watt, you're just a casual football fan. You're like, oh, I like this NFL thing. And you watched Hard Knocks. You're like, that's the most intense guy I've ever seen. That guy hates losing. And then you watch that thing and you must have gone, oh, that guy must have just blown a gasket. 41-0 at halftime. God. And this, in the same place that the Clemson Tigers beat the Miami Hurricanes 58-0. Sun Life Stadium, where dreams go to die. God. That's great. But Dan Campbell is got the Dolphins playing well. Okay, he played the Titans and the Texans, and he should have obliterated those teams that he did. But even then, they're still NFL football teams, and you're not supposed to beat a team 41-0 at halftime, and that's what they've done. And they just took it to Tennessee. They looked so good against the Titans. All right, okay, this is the Dolphins team that we kind of expected, and now they're playing with a confidence. They run the ball. Tannehill's throwing the ball very well. Defense is starting to pick up the pace a bit. I hope they give a showing on the Patriots, because the Patriots beat them and beat them badly. Oh, then we're going back to square one. Coming up next, the name that is surfacing up for the Miami Hurricanes job that's very interesting. Next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, we've been talking about the Miami Hurricanes job opening. Al Golden was fired after a 58-0 loss to Clemson on Saturday, and many people wanted him to lose his job, and he did lose his job. So who are the Hurricanes going to hire, and what kind of coach would go to Miami given some of the obstacles that the current Hurricanes currently have? They are a team that is losing the recruiting wars a bit. They've got a good starting quarterback, but still you have a fan base to win over. You've got a program to revitalize. You've got tough alumni on your back trying to get that program up to speed. There is a culture, whether or not it's there or not, in Miami that has to sort of be met, right? Look, people talk about the swagger of the U. Well, it may not be existing now, and they may have lost that, but there is an expectation that you'll get it back. Who could that person be? Does it take a Miami-oriented guy to be the coach of the Hurricanes, or can somebody just go down there and take over that program and, you know, just start from scratch and rebuild it? Well, there's a lot of names that have been surfacing for this job. Charlie Strong kind of scoffed at the notion that he would be the Miami Hurricanes head coach. But you know what name is popping up that's getting a lot of steam? I'll give you one guess. Get one guess on this. The name that is popping up that's getting some steam. And it's not Lane Kiffin. So if you're thinking Lane Kiffin, put that in the back of your head. We'll talk about him in a second. The name that people are buzzing about for the Miami job is a man that had the job before. Butch Davis. Butch Davis led Miami to a level of national championship contention. Then Larry Coker took over and was able to get those national titles with Ken Dorsey and whatnot. But Butch Davis helped build back the Miami Hurricane program. He left to take a shot at the NFL with the Cleveland Browns. He ended up at North Carolina, where there was enough scandal, but he claims that the NCAA has given him a letter saying he didn't do anything wrong. He was on a radio station down in Miami and claimed that he says, quote, "I got a letter from the NCAA that says I was not involved in anything that took place in 10 investigations with the Tar Heels." Well, let me just say this right now. I am really for schools staying away from guys that got a little bit of dirty laundry. But at Miami, I would let this pass. If indeed you do your diligence and there is nothing at North Carolina that would put you in a bad light, I would seriously consider Butch Davis. I would seriously consider Butch Davis. I can't stress this enough. Davis is a Miami guy. He got his first coaching, early coaching jobs in Miami under Jimmy Johnson, took over the program, was very proud to have taken over that program. Guys who played for him swore by him. When he left, there was devastation with the Hurricanes. They liked Butch Davis. Players who played for him loved him and support Miami making this move to bring him back. He wants to be back. He claims in this interview that he's already built a staff of people that would be interested in going with him to Miami should he get hired for the job. I think this is a good marriage. I think this is a good second marriage for both. Davis made some mistakes, no question. How he left Miami, why he left Miami, the meltdown in Cleveland, that is all for analysis. But there is no question that he gets Miami better than Miami gets itself right now. And this is the trap you put yourself in. Florida was in this too. When Steve Spurrier, before Steve Spurrier got to Florida, Florida wasn't a very good football team. They didn't have a history of winning. They didn't have a history of dominating the SEC and whatnot. Spurrier got there, brought the fun and gun, changed it around. That's it. No more. We're not going back. We're not accepting mediocrity. We are going to bring a coach that's going to win national championships. That's who we are now. Before, when we were just so thankful that we could even be a part of a national conversation, that's what we used to be. But now we're national championship oriented, and that's all we want to be. Miami, you can't go back to just having good old fun football on a Saturday night in South Florida and make Sun Life Stadium rock. You have to have a coach that gets the culture of Miami. Because if you don't get the right guy, Warren Sapp and those guys I mentioned earlier tonight will eat him alive. If you don't get the right guy at Miami, Michael Irvin and all of those guys are going to make sure that this guy knows exactly what the U is all about. Now, I got my problems with the U, okay? I don't think right now is a time for, hey, they got to understand this is Miami. No, Miami's been bad for a while. Let's stop pretending Miami is a recently very good football team that's been hit by hard times. No, they have had a while where Miami has not been very good. So we're not revitalizing a program as much as we are rebuilding and trying to restore a program that has been left out in the weather for a long period of time. Right? This isn't like when a piece of furniture breaks and you rebuild it. This is like when a piece of furniture sits out in the rain and the cold and the elements, and then you go, I wonder if I could get some new mattresses and maybe some new wood and rebuild this thing and make it look nice again. That's Miami. And Butch Davis seems to be that kind of guy. Now, Lane Kiffin, because let's get to him for a second. Lane Kiffin. I like Lane Kiffin, but I don't love Lane Kiffin. And I think if you're Miami, don't be the Lane Kiffin stomping ground. Be a little bit above. And here's what I mean. Lane Kiffin went to Oakland, and they couldn't get rid of him fast enough. Then he went to Tennessee. And while he was doing good things at Tennessee, he had his eye on the USC job. And even though it was a once-in-a-lifetime job, he butchered how he went there. And then he went there, and he couldn't coach USC to the prominence that they wanted. Now at Alabama, his career has gotten a resurgence. It's been brought up because Alabama on offense at times is under a very good watch under Lane Kiffin. But if I was Miami, I would say, look, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. This is too important of a hire. And while Lane Kiffin has got a lot of great things that he brings, he's got a couple of dark things that he brings, and I don't think we want to play in that pool. Yeah, Butch Davis has too, but there is no question he's a Miami guy. That might override a couple of problems you may have at North Carolina or the Cleveland Brown thing or how he left for that job to start with. I think Butch Davis is a guy I would really strongly consider if I was the Hurricanes. I would really look at Butch Davis. Now, there is going to be some other names that are going to pop up. They're going to be there's going to be a lot of names that they're going to have access to. But this guy, when he arrived at Miami, there were NCAA violations from the time of Dennis Erickson, and Davis overcame that and built that program up to a national power. That's almost similar to what's going on with this program. Without all the massive NCAA violations and scholarship losses. That's 31 scholarships under Dennis Erickson. And Davis made that work. Davis figured out to make that work. So if I was Miami, I would take the Butch Davis route. Now, earlier we were talking about whether or not a job is good or not. And I throw out this caveat because I think all head coaching jobs inevitably are good. I mean, all head coaching jobs, if you can get them, you take them. There's only a few of them in the world. A Division I head coaching job in college football, you take it. Even if it's a lousy place to recruit, even if the facilities aren't very good, you know, go there, make it work. I mean, James Franklin has got a career job at Penn State. He's got a job, one of the best jobs in college football at Penn State. Great fan base, great facility, legacy, great conference. He got there because he went to Vanderbilt and won where nobody goes and wins. And now you write your ticket. So go to Miami, build that up. You want to leave Miami, great. If you want to stay at Miami, great. South Carolina, the same thing. But if I was a young coach, if I was young and I was looking forward to going to a place, Miami is a better job than South Carolina. And I say that as a South Carolina Gamecock. I would take the Miami job over South Carolina. If I was looking for a place to win, that's where I would win. Why? Because I can get talent in Miami that would make me win tomorrow. If I can get talent into Miami, I can win in the ACC. I can bring in strong talent to South Carolina and still not win the SEC. But in Miami, you bring in a couple of good, solid football players from South Florida, you're now in contention. You're in contention for an ACC title, and you might get in the playoff. You could be that good.
Do you think college coaches in general look at what's happened to guys like Spurrier and Lane Kiffin, Nick Saban, all these guys that have great careers going in college football, and then try the NFL game, the head coaching game in the NFL, and fall flat on their face, and then end up having to come back to college and finding a way back in. Now, a guy like Nick Saban or Steve Spurrier, they're going to walk in and get any job they want. But, you know, Butch Davis is an example. You know, there's other examples of guys. Greg Schiano.
Greg Schiano is on Butch Davis's list of assistant coaches.
I think I did read that today, yeah. So, I mean, it's just like, do you think these guys start being like, well, another one is right here in Houston, Bill O'Brien. You know, he left where James Franklin is, Penn State.
Yep, Penn State.
He could be there for a long time. He had a quarterback. You know, they're getting over their violations. They're getting their scholarships back. But now these guys are leaving. They're going to go to the NFL for 3-4 years, and then they're out of a job, and then they're looking for coordinator jobs.
So what you're saying is if I was a young college coach, would I want to go to the NFL?
Yeah,
would I be wary of going to the NFL?
Yeah, would you be wary? It seems like these guys are just taking the first job that comes available.
If I was a young coach and I said to my wife or my family, look, I'm not interested in instant glory. I'm not interested in winning a Super Bowl by 40 or 45, or I'm not trying to pull that off. I'm looking for long-term. Like, I, I, I'm 37. Let's say I'm 37 and I'm a young coach. And I say to my wife, see that guy over there, Steve Spurrier? He's 70. I want to be him at 70. I want to have my pick of the litter. Yeah. I want to be well-respected, Hall of Famer, come and go as I please. I want to be that. If I want, if the correct career path for that is to stay where you are in college and work until you own something in college, then go try the NFL.
Right.
If it sticks, make it stick. If it doesn't, then you come back and get a job immediately.
Right.
But if you're young and you get, and you just put like, oh, you know, you're doing really well at Central Florida and you got a good bowl win out of it, and you're a young guy that can go to the NFL, and you go to the NFL and you falter a little bit, yeah, you could be lost in the coordinator shuffle a bit. I do think NFL coaches, even if they fail, but even if they fail, could get back into the college game easily. I mean, think about a school like Chattanooga. Right. And they got a very good head coach, by the way. So I don't mean to snuck on the Chattanooga's got a very, very good coach. But a school like Chattanooga, if they were looking for a coach, they would die to have a former Baltimore Ravens head coach, even if it was for a cup of coffee. So but the long term, I want to be Spurrier, or I want to be one of the old time like a Bobby Bowden, where I just am so revered. Spend your early 30s and 40s building your college resume.
It just seems like so many of these young guys, like Shiano, another one is Doug Marrone,
you know,
just had some success at Syracuse and somehow got this job with Buffalo and then fell flat on his face as soon as he went there.
There might be a panic because there's only 32 jobs and you're like, this is the only time I'm ever going to get one.
And I get that. But I mean, now see like a job that may come open this year that if a young coach got a chance to take, of course he takes it, is Indianapolis, because you have Andrew Luck. You have talent on that offense. So if you can come in and start building the defense up and the offensive line, then all of a sudden you have a championship caliber team on your hands.
Yeah, exactly.
But when you're going to Houston, who doesn't have a quarterback, you know, has a running back who always gets hurt, that's not a good situation when you're leaving one of the top programs in the nation in the college ranks.
It's funny because when Lane Kiffin, got fired at USC, I knew the Kiffin name was still going to carry weight.
Right.
But I didn't know his next job was going to be offensive coordinator at Alabama.
Yeah, that was...
Like, I was like, okay, Kiffin's going to have to go coach, like, San Diego State or something. Like, he's going to have to go chill out somewhere. Like, and just kind of build himself back up. He went from USC head coach to offensive coordinator at Alabama. I mean, goodness gracious. That is like, that's like a lateral move. All right, a little less than a lateral move, but still, it's a great gig to walk into. And Saban's assistants get paid almost as well as head coaches at other places. So it is amazing to me how you can pretty much do anything and still be in consideration for... I know guys in radio that ticked off the wrong people and can't get back into the game. Like, just had shows or whatever, and just ticked off the wrong people and, you know, ended up in market 295 and just can't get back to the major market level. In coaching? Oh, forget it. Just chill out for 10 minutes. You'll get an interview tomorrow. It's always like, oh, I butchered that team. That's all right. Butchered that, no problem. I mean, look, the fact that I'm vouching for Butch Davis left the Hurricanes high and dry for that Cleveland Browns job.
Did you see the former Hurricane that threw his name in the hat?
Ed Reed.
Yeah, he's just like, I'd be interested.
Ed Reed is going to be, yes. that would be sweet. And that would be fun. More fun than Butch Davis.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Let's just give this guy the job and let's just see what he does.
What about Gino Toretta? Can Gino Toretta go back and be the head coach there?
Let's do it.
That's good stuff. Good old Canes. What a fraternity that is.
Oh, man.
God. Every time the U documentary is on, I watch it. Every time. I love it.
I would almost prefer Butch Davis to have all that stuff be true at North Carolina.
Oh, I know.
And then go back to Miami and just start it all over. Just
exactly.
Do what you got to do. It's the U. Let's do it.
I loved it. That documentary is so good.
Right.
When they went to the Cotton Bowl to play Texas,
yeah.
And they were like, that's enough with this. We got cotton. And yeah. We were like, this is so, and then we just destroyed them.
They were insane.
They had 50 penalties.
Yeah, those years were insane.
Those were crazy. Those were crazy. Crazy times. They were more popular than any Dolphin and anybody in that town. They were so big. God, that's such a funny documentary. I love Luther Campbell in that. He's great. Did I ever give some money to a needy football player because he couldn't get a ride home or take his girlfriend out for pizza? No, I wouldn't do anything like that. That's such a great fraternity. All right, 800-777-2907. Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to the Quicken Loan Studios. And back to Tony D.
All right, World Series tonight in Kansas City. I said Mets in six. Where are you going, Adam?
I got Mets in... I'm going to say six. Part of me wants to say five, but I'm going to go six.
I want to say five, too, but I think it's going to go longer than that. I got to give the Royals some credit. I think Johnny Cueto could be great or horrible, but he's going to be one or the other. He's not going to be like, well, it was all right, three runs over six innings. It was all right, struck out four or five. I think Cueto is either going to be like, wow, one run over eight, struck out 10, or seven runs in two innings. Oh, my God.
The one thing that I'm really interested to see is this Mets power pitching, and they strike out a ton of guys versus this Kansas City team who struck out the least in baseball. Something's got to give here.
You'd think so, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it's just going to be like, oh, the Royals are striking out six or seven times a game, kind of meet in the middle. I think it's going to be one or the other. And I tend to lean pitching.
The Mets won 29 years ago. The Mets won today was the 29th anniversary of their last win. I'm seeing if I got that right. 29, yeah, 2086 was 29 years ago. And it was a really, really good Mets team that won the World Series. I mean, very, very good Mets team that won that World Series over the Red Sox. And they went to another one in 2000 and haven't, that was it. Basically, close to 30 years, they've had one World Series championship and another World Series appearance. And that was it. Kansas City won their last World Series 30 years ago. So these are two long droughts for their cities. Kansas City in 85 over the St. Louis Cardinals, and then the Mets in 86 against the Boston Red Sox. If you're Major League Baseball, where do you get the mileage? Where do you get the most mileage out of a World Series champion? You would immediately think the Mets, right? But the Yankees have kind of taken care of the New York market over the last 15 years. I think Kansas City, I think this would say a lot about where baseball is if Kansas City wins the World Series. And it's funny because both of these teams were kind of built in the same way, right? They were patient and they developed and they did all the right things. But I think this Kansas City team, I think people fell in love with this Kansas City team last year that didn't have any rooting interest, had seen San Francisco win a couple of World Series, wanted to see this spunky team from Kansas City do something cool. And I think they're ready to watch this team win a World Series. But I think this Mets team is a team, I think this is a team people should really like. They are young, fun. There's no arrogance on this team. There's no sense of, we deserve this because we're New York or anything like that. They knew it is in really, really hard to win a World Series. Some teams have done it, haven't done it at all in 100 plus years. Some do it consistently every couple of years. The Mets are a team that have been patient enough. They're a New York team that you can love. I think the Royals are loved a little bit more. Yahoo Sports Radio.